Let me ask you something. What if there was someone out there who kept a log of every single thing you did every minute of the day? That would probably creep you out. Well, that's exactly what happens every time you go online. Your internet provider stores logs of every website you've ever visited and can legally sell this data to anyone. Worse yet, the government can obtain your data via bulk FISA order even if you're not personally suspected of any crime. That's why I use ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN reroutes your internet connection through their secure servers so your internet provider can't see or log what you do online. Visit expressvpn.com/Mullen right now and find out how you can get 3 months for free. That's expressvpn.com/Mullen. Protect your data and get 3 months for free today.
Every revolution starts in the minds of the people. Arm yourself for the war of ideas. Take back your life. Take back your liberty. Tom Mullen talks freedom.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Tom Mullen Talks Freedom. I have a few announcements to make before I get into today's topic. And I did originally have an interview scheduled today, and I had to reschedule that one. Next week, I'm going to have Robbie De Niro back. And if you don't remember Robbie from last year, the year before, he is the local gym owner here in Western New York. He's, I believe, in Chickawaga, which is a suburb of Buffalo, the city of my birth. And he refused to comply with lockdowns. That was the beginning of his resistance to this mad, brave new world that we're currently experiencing. He refused to lock down. The cops came. He asked the cop for if they had a warrant. He basically kicked the cops out and then went to court over this and won. So he serves as a stark reminder to all of us that, yes, these things can be resisted, and almost a reprimand to everybody who did knuckle under to what I consider the most atrocious intrusion into our liberty domestically in my lifetime, even more than anything that happened after 9/11. I did try to resist myself by going out to patronize local businesses, but since they were all closed, it was kind of moot. I did not own a brick and mortar business at the time. I do now. But Robbie did it and then had his day in court and won. And subsequently, I've had him on a few times. The next thing he took on was mask mandates in schools. And not to give away the whole episode coming up, but that's led to a whole other slew of legal battles and wrongful arrests. And Robbie has some big news for us next week. So that ought to be a very interesting conversation. Looking forward to have him on. Got some other guests coming on up as well. Today, I wanted to talk about something that's been on my mind for quite a while. And the working title of this podcast has been The Trump Conundrum. But I think maybe the word paradox is even a better fit for what I'm talking about. Although, as the great Vincent Vega would say, both words are in the same ballpark. But the paradox is that Trump obviously has the support that he has because he's hated by all the right people. And of course, that even resonates with me. Anybody that the national media, the establishment in Washington, D.C., all of the various parasitical administrative state agencies, anyone that those people don't like, I shouldn't say don't like, hate, loathe this much, there's got to be something good about him. And I did not vote for Donald Trump in 2016 or 20, but I can understand why, you know, well-meaning people would do so and want to do so again. Well, at least would want to have done so in 2016. And that's kind of where the paradox for me comes in, because in 2016, although I did not like his, you know, 18th century mercantilist economic views, and a lot of what he said, just, you know, he's saying there's a problem, but a lot of what he said the problem was wasn't the problem. I could see how he was perceived as a threat to the establishment. He was perceived as what I called a hand grenade. We'll just pull out the pin and throw him in there and see what happens. And I guess the conundrum I have, or the paradox, is nothing did happen. Nothing about the administrative state changed with Trump in there, and he didn't try to change any of it. Now, a lot of people will say, well, he was never given the chance. Of course he was given the chance. He could have hired anybody he wanted for his cabinet. No one forced him to load it up with neocons. There's some talk about, he was trying to play nice with the deep state and say, look, I'm not that threatening. I just want to do some things differently. I don't see why we have to make excuses. We've lived through a Trump presidency, and we got the biggest, most powerful government in American history for having him president. That's just a fact. We got the biggest budget by far, the largest growth in the budget, and a faster growth in the budget even before 2020, before the COVID disaster of his partially his own making. Spending was already increasing at a pace of $200 billion per year. And just for a little history lesson, spending increased under the Obama administration at a pace of about $112 billion per year. As you can tell, I've looked up these numbers. I welcome you to go do the same. They are accurate. So Trump, like most Republican presidents, or as is what happens when most Republicans are president, spending went up almost twice as fast as it did during the terms of his Democratic predecessor. So we have that. Now, of course, can't ignore the issue that dominates everything, which is immigration. And I will concede Trump did some different things on immigration. And the one policy I think really was a good one was making people waiting for asylum wait in Mexico. I mean, I don't know, you know, we can get down to the philosophical arguments around this or whatever. But we all know that 90% or something like that of illegal immigrants are people who came in here ostensibly legally seeking asylum or some other status, and just blew off the next step in their immigration process. Okay, so that policy, I would think was effective. I it's so hard to really know what policies are effective in something like this, because on one hand you say, well, he deported less people, so obviously what that means, less people were coming. Or, I don't know, he didn't deport as many people as Obama did, but he certainly talked about it more. And so in any case, it's a very tough thing to get a hold of. Like, first of all, people that are coming into the country that we don't know about, we can't number those. So you can only count the number of people that they catch, at least at one point. But as I said, as far as we know, most of those people that are here illegally, the immigration department did have a touch on at some point, and then they just blow off the rest of the process. So I don't know. He never built this wall he was talking about. He claims he built some of it. Obviously, it's not working. And obviously, what's going on with the Biden administration is a whole new level beyond which what was going on even with Obama or Bush or anybody before them. So one of the problems with immigration is it's not really immigration. It's trafficking, both voluntary and involuntary. So you have NGOs in third world countries literally recruiting these people to come to the United States. And of course, you know, that's no immigration policy is going to work against that, because they're recruiting them to come in as refugees. And unless you just say coming in as a refugee or asylum is illegal, then that, you know, enforcing the policies are not going to work, especially, as we said, since they're going to leave. So let's just give them gave it the college try on immigration. But beyond that, what else did he do? Yes, he imposed unilaterally tariffs, legally but not constitutionally, because the law, the bullshit emergency law that Congress passed, saying, well, if it's an emergency, then the president can he can assume the taxation power. That's basically how Trump did it. So he didn't break any laws doing that, and he didn't break any precedents, because Reagan did it, and Republicans love to put tariffs on steel, number one. Just about everyone does it. Of course, that's part of the formation of the party, was tariffs. So they've never been good on that. But he put on some tariffs and nothing happened. And then he put on the heavy tariffs he wanted to put on. And manufacturing went into a recession. And economic indicators started saying this is going to turn out really bad. So he bailed on them. He made some deal with the Chinese and he rolled them back to where they are right now. So, you know, I don't agree with any of them. I think there should be zero tariffs, even if the other guys don't lower theirs. Okay, we're better off with zero tariffs, even if the other country has 100% tariffs, than we are with tariffs on our own imports. Okay, I've made that case many times in writing. Some of you may not agree with it. That's okay, but that's my position anyway. The bottom line is Trump didn't stick with the tariffs. He didn't bring manufacturing back. It's not the manufacturing jobs he was promising to bring back aren't coming back ever, no matter what you do. Manufacturing output, by the way, is at an all-time high, as it has been just about every year throughout the 20th century and early 21st century, even after NAFTA, even after China joined the WTO. None of this affected American manufacturing. It's taking less jobs because we're doing it more efficiently, and doing it with more automation. But you go look at manufacturing output, it's the highest it's ever been. So that's a fact. Where it did take dips was during the financial crises, especially the one after 2008. And it took a long time to get back after that. But certainly these trade deals he talks about did not impede manufacturing at all. So yes, some labor-intensive manufacturing is done elsewhere. Less labor-intensive manufacturing, more of it then is done here. But in a robust economy, that keeps producing and coming up with more and more products, of course, manufacturing is going to fall back a little bit as a percentage of everything you produce. But it's still right in there between 12 and 14% of GDP, where it's been since the end of World War II. Okay. And I don't want to get off on criticizing Trump's policies as much as the whole paradox thing of why everybody still wants to vote for him, and they do. But the last thing I'll say about this is that manufacturing jobs never, ever made up more than 30% of all jobs. In fact, it was almost always lower than that, much lower, in more into the 20%, 25, 27% range, except during World War II, when they were just making bombs to blow up. Now, this didn't make anybody richer. It temporarily made the people who were unemployed, they got money, but that was all inflation and taxation. you know, none of this was real. It's the same thing Hitler did. So, you know, apart from like the death camps and all the other crazy evil crap that Hitler did, he also, you know, sent everybody to work making bombs and stuff, and then claimed he had solved unemployment. So manufacturing never made up that large a percentage of the population. So let me just say it another way. At its very peak, manufacturing jobs, 70% of the population was doing something else. So I think people have this idea that Trump's going to put on tariffs, and then people are going to stop importing manufactured goods, and like 80% of the population is going to work in manufacturing. No, that was never the case. It wasn't the case at the height of American manufacturing employment, and it wouldn't be the case anytime, no matter how many tariffs you put on. So it really is just completely a retarded idea. But be that as it may, he didn't even follow through on that. Okay, he backed off. His advisors, which a few of his loyal advisors, the people who really believe in him, were saying, don't back away. But all the other ones that people call rhinos, and some even call libertarians, although that's kind of a laugh that anyone in Washington, D.C. at all is a libertarian, other than like Thomas Massie and Rand Paul. You know, there's two of them, two people. His advisors told him, look, we're going to have a recession. You're going to lose the next election. So he backed off and he made a deal in early 2020. It was signed, and the manufacturing immediately rebounded, by the way. So if you trace the ISM manufacturing index to see when it was in recession and when it came back, it locks in step completely with those tariffs and their removal. So he didn't do that. I keep wanting to think that his supporters are really, truly anti-war. I actually think Trump is sincere about not fighting at least as many wars. And I always wondered, is it just because he says that the supporters go along with it when all they really care about is immigration and tariffs? Or is there a critical mass of people who are sick of this crap? You know, if there is, and if the anti-war part of his message is at all part of the reason that people want to reelect him, well, he didn't do that either. Okay, he promised in 2018 he would be out of Afghanistan with all the troops home by Christmas. And then he sent more troops, and then he never left. Then he made some deal that, well, we're going to get out, but you'll have to elect me again first. No, sorry. Sorry, Donald. You know, we've heard that too many times. Okay. The fact that it was Joe Biden that got the troops out of Afghanistan is just a travesty. As despicable a person as Joe Biden is. And as warmongerish as he's shown that he is, and corrupt and everything else, to allow him to be the one to end the Afghanistan war, it's just inexcusable to me. And also, okay, let's talk about it. He bombed Syria twice. Now, there's some murmurings that maybe he bombed like buildings where there's nobody in them. And if that's true, that's good. I'm glad. If that was an intentional thing to, look, I'm going to do this bombing to get all these people off my back, but it's, you know, I'm not going to kill anybody. I hope that's the case. And when he refused to bomb Iran over them shooting down the drone, I give him full kudos for that, too. In fact, he came out and he said, listen, I'm not killing 150 Iranians over an unmanned drone. I'm just not going to do it. I don't think I've ever heard a president say in my lifetime say anything that sensible. So that's good for him. But we got to remember the whole Iran thing was his high pressure campaign that he let John Bolton run. How do you think that was going to turn out? Okay, so he almost got us into a war with Iran, even though while he was saying he didn't want one. So he did that, and he funded Ukraine. Now, he tried to hold up the funding to get, you know, an investigation into his chief political opponent. Boy, that was a bad precedent to set, wasn't it, Donald? But I think he was always going to send it. And he still talks about Putin like a neocon now. And, you know, a lot of the foreign policy, the positive parts have faded away during this campaign. And I don't exactly know why that is. Now, he's still saying some good things. I'm not going to, you know, don't want to be dishonest. And I do have this instinct, and it could be wrong, that if he were elected in 2020, we wouldn't have got the Ukraine war, even though he did send the weapons or the funding for the weapons. And he didn't send funding to Ukraine. He sent it to, you know, Raytheon and Lockheed Martin, and then they sent they shipped the goods. I don't even know if it actually goes to an account in Ukraine and then back to Lockheed, or just direct payment, whatever. Doesn't matter. So he was bad on you. He was part of the problem. He's part of the cause of the Ukraine war by funding Zelensky's just unremitting attack on his own civilians. And this is where it gets really weird, because the freak out over that, seeing as he ended up sending the weapons, it's almost like the empire was like, this guy can't be trusted. All right, he sent the money, but he hesitated. What's he going to do next? Like, anybody messing with the Ukraine scam, and that's what it always has been for the whole time, since 2004, when they first overthrew the Ukraine government. That wasn't even the 2014 wasn't even the first time, okay? But especially after 2014, this is just a big corrupt scam. It's a place to funnel, launder all sorts of money, take advantage of a very corrupt government, but get your own people in there. I mean, the president's son, at vice president at the time, was sitting on the board of a huge oil company. He had no business being on the board of it. It's so transparent that you know, it's almost like they're saying to us, look, we're just going to do what we want, and we really don't care whether you like it or not. Okay. So the fact that Ukraine thing was a whole impeachment by itself, right? So the fact that they went that far over him just holding it up a little bit and making that call to try and get Biden investigated, even though nothing happened from that, you know, that's very telling. I mean, this is in the win column for the Donald, okay? The fact that they are this nervous about him. But I'm just looking at results, and I can't really find any. And I guess the final piece in this is, of course, COVID. And you know, the Democrat, it's almost like the Herbert Hoover thing. Like, Herbert Hoover did the whole New Deal before Roosevelt did it, and somehow gets written down in the history books as the guy who tried to just liquidate, do nothing, let the market solve it. You know, that's the opposite of the truth. Hoover's whole career, he was an interventionist. He was a massive interventionist in the Great Depression. Not as much as FDR, because it just kept escalating after Hoover left. But they talk about Trump like pretending there was no pandemic. I mean, during Trump's, all the lockdowns happened during Trump's presidency. Okay, they extended somewhat into Biden's, but for the most part, the most severe part, it was during Trump's presidency. And he's not running on "they lied to me." You know, and I know this is difficult. You can't say you made a mistake when you were in office, but you should reelect me anyway. But Trump oversaw the lockdowns. He didn't order them, because the state governors did that, and he did leave it to the state governors, and a few resisted. Only one resisted right from the beginning. That's Kristi Noem in South Dakota, who gets no credit for this. Ron DeSantis, as Trump correctly points out, locked down for 6 months. And then, he had that famous roundtable with non-government epidemiologists and physicians. And then he reopened. And he gets duly a lot of credit for that. I mean, it would have been better if he never locked down. It would have been harder in a state like Florida than in South Dakota. But hey, kudos for him. By the way, he and Kristi Noem both got elected in landslides. They won both by over 30%. And both of them in the previous election won by just a nose. I mean, it was close right down to almost recount for both of them. And then they both won landslides for resisting COVID. Trump made lockdowns possible. Okay, even if he was out there saying we shouldn't do it, which he wasn't, by the way, he signing the CARES Act funded the lockdowns. Even New York and California would not have been able to lock down if the feds didn't print $6 trillion and hand it out. $2.5 trillion for the CARES Act, which Trump not only signed, he insisted his name go on the checks. Okay? So, I mean, I don't think it's hyperbole to call him President Lockdown. He's the guy. And if you're going to say, well, nobody, a president couldn't have stopped it, well, then what do we need him for? Okay? What good is it to elect him if he can't stop the advance of this totalitarian state? But he could. You think if Ron Paul was president, any of that would have happened? Absolutely no. First of all, Ron Paul would have fired all the people who Trump had out there in his press conferences before they ever got a chance to peddle their baloney, their unscientific gibberish to the population. So, and Ron Paul, he wouldn't have just had the troops out of Afghanistan. They'd be gone from everywhere. And we'd be talking about what to do with the federal surpluses even after the deep tax cuts. So it can be done. And there's always a choice on the ballot for somebody who will do much more than the Republican or the Democrat, and people don't elect them. And that's why nothing changes.
And here's the thing. Trump is not at all backing away from any of what he did in 2020. He's running on it. He's running, saying that he saved millions of lives by not ordering. I can't remember what words he uses, but something like we had to shut down. He said things like that, and we saved millions of lives. He's criticized Ron DeSantis kind of alternately and incongruously. On one hand, that it wasn't really Ron DeSantis who achieved good results in Florida, because it was just the sunshine, because Florida is a sunnier state. He's made statements vaguely to that effect. And then he's also, on the other hand, criticized him for having more deaths and ignoring the, an age breakdown where Florida was one of the top 10 states in terms of least deaths from COVID. So and he's running on the vaccine and saying he didn't get enough credit for it. Now, there's nothing wrong with the existence of the vaccine, but there is certainly something wrong with the government giving a private company billions of dollars to develop the vaccine and giving them an emergency use authorization. Which pretty much was the reason that treatments for COVID-19 had to be suppressed, like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. So, that is all, the fruit of the emergency use authorization. And he has been on the record many times saying that the vaccine shouldn't be mandated. But let's face it. that would not even be a question if he didn't give the pharmaceutical companies billions of dollars to develop something so fast and then agree to the emergency use authorization. So, I mean, all of that's at his doorstep. And besides the vaccine mandates, which I'm not going to blame him for, but will point out would not have happened, again, without his actions, because we wouldn't have had a vaccine for until long after the COVID pandemic was over. He's running on the fact that this was a good idea. He's not at all admitting that this was one of the worst domestic policies in American history, and one of the most destructive, if not the most destructive, economically, socially. I still have people in my business area wearing masks to this day. Lots of them. I would say maybe even a majority. It's just awful what 2020 did to society, and Donald Trump presided over it all. And despite, I should also say that at the very beginning, he demonstrated that he knew it was a bad idea. He was even saying, you're going to kill a lot of people if you shut the economy down as well. And then he just buckled under, like he does every time, like he did to the generals as far as Afghanistan was concerned, like he did to everybody on tariffs in his administration that you know, are now called rhinos. That was actually good, but okay, but not for the people who voted for him. Well, it was good for them too, but they don't think it was. And then he buckled under the little twerp, Anthony Fauci, and that woman in the scarf. What was her name? Deborah Birx. I mean, he was intimidated into agreeing to this absolute abomination by the most sniveling bureaucrats who ever lived. So this is why I just, you know, as far as the fervent support now, that's what I don't get. How does all of this just get swept aside? And he still considered this big middle finger to the establishment. That's what I don't get. On the other hand, the establishment seems to be treating him that way, unless this is all some big scam and he's in on it. I don't know. That seems far-fetched to me. But this fervor for Trump now, this is what I don't understand. I know people make decisions emotionally. I just don't know why their emotions are still with this guy. What are they seeing? Are they, I guess I'll try to make a case, and I'm not trying to build a straw man here. I'm really trying to understand it. And I think the case is, look, he's on our side. We know the people that are trying to put him in jail are completely evil. Okay, so far I am holding hands with you on that. And there's got to be a reason why they don't want him back. So far so good. And the only thing I could think of is that they're kind of making an excuse for his first presidency. Oh, he was investigated, blah, blah, blah. Well, yeah, but that didn't stop him from doing the other things. It didn't stop him. He put the tariffs on anyway. Even though I don't agree with him, he did do them. And then he decided to take them back to improve his chances of reelection. Now, that's a fact, okay? I guess, you know, I've heard people say we had the most secure borders ever while he was president. I just don't think that's true. I think millions of people still came in. Was it less? I don't know. Maybe 10%? I don't know. It was still a problem, right? For everyone who thinks that this is a problem. And I think that this massive influx of people, which is not by, I never cared about Mexicans wandering over the border, picking some vegetables, sending the money home, and then going back. That never bothered me ever. Okay. But that's not what's going on now. These people are not, I don't even know if a majority of them are from Mexico anymore. And they're not just coming here, because they decided to pick up and go. They're being recruited. And this is a somewhat sinister plan. The one thing in the back of my mind is they may be thinking about like who's going to pay Social Security, because if you don't have immigrants, you're not going to pay for it. Even if they vote Democrat, there's just going to be no one to pay for it. The birth rates are in the toilet and no one's, we're not even at replacement level. So how that's going away unless you bring in a whole bunch of new people. And also, I think big business is worried about the labor force. Not that they just want lower wages. Like, there's not going to be enough people, you know? This is a real problem, by the way. Maybe I'll wait for another podcast. In fact, I have a guest I want to bring on about that. In any case, I don't think you could say, like, the immigration problem was solved for 4 years while Trump was president. And he did sincerely try to do some things, and I think some of them worked. And let's just say, I don't know this for sure, but it was less and good for him. That's against lockdowns, Ukraine, tariffs. Again, it's a good thing to me that he lowered them, but whatever. What else did people care about? Kind of this less anti-American rhetoric. Okay, I'll go with that. That doesn't put any food on the table, okay, fine. But, I'm hoping I get a lot of comments on this. And please, if you don't mind, don't email me. Make a comment on the website, TomMullenTalksFreedom.com. The podcast, I'll load up to a show notes page there. If you're going to make a comment, I get so many emails and nobody else sees them. And I'd rather have a discussion, because sometimes at least I learn some things from the comments. So give me your best explanation for what's going on here. I guess, you know, the only thing I can put my finger on is this is a very visceral thing. They don't care what Trump's record was. They hate the people that are attacking him enough to say, look, if you don't want this, then I want it. It's like, I think I've made this analogy before in Star Trek 3, for all you people old enough to remember Star Trek 3, and the Klingon played by Christopher Lloyd is got, you know, a gun on Kirk, and Kirk needs Spock to be beamed up to the ship because Spock will die if he doesn't get beamed up. And the Vulcan, Christopher Lloyd, won't let him. He goes, Kirk says something like, well, at least beam up the Vulcan and I'll stay here. And Lloyd says, no. And Kirk says, why not? And he goes, because you wish it. That's it. I mean, that's the only explanation I can find for why, you know, it seems like more people want to vote for Trump this time around after they saw what he did in office, after he presided over lockdowns, after he made them possible by signing the CARES Act, the whole thing. It's just because the right people hate him, and they really, really, really hate him. And I really, really, really hate them too. So, so I'm with all of you that are going to vote for this guy on that. And I'd like to hear, you know, any response that you'd like to give. Please leave it in the comments. If you think I've been off base on anything here, factually, I don't think I have, as far as his concrete record. I mean, other than awesome tweets, which, you know, that was probably the best part of his presidency to me, was firing high-ranking officials on Twitter. I mean, you can't get better than that to at least mock these awful, awful people who think so highly of themselves and think they're doing important work, which, you know, that we would be so much better off to pay them double to stay home. That part I love too. And hey, if it's going to be Biden or Trump again, I'd rather have Trump. I just don't get the enthusiasm. So that's the Trump paradox. His record versus whatever people think's going to happen if he gets elected again. Leave it in the comments. Next week, Robbie De Niro, and a lot more coming up soon. Thanks for listening. All right, friends, that's going to do it for today. Just a few reminders to stop by TomMullenTalksFreedom.com/support and check out all the ways that you can support my efforts here, including joining my Patreon or my Substack. And if you haven't already, make sure that you go to itsthefedstupid.com to download a copy of my free ebook, It's the Fed Stupid. And as always, if you like the music you've heard here on Tom Mullen Talks Freedom, you can hear more at TomMullenSings.com. Thanks for listening.
The War of Ideas has only just begun. Arm yourself with the knowledge you need by heading to TomMullenTalksFreedom.com and subscribing to our email list. And remember, every revolution starts in the minds of the people.